The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Good morning. You're very welcome to the show on this glorious bank holiday weekend. So I'll tell you where we're at now as I see it from the front of the papers. Either everything is going fantastically or else everything is falling to pieces. So you can decide which one you want to go with there, maybe. The front of the Sunday Independent, Leo Varadkar in very buoyant mood in a piece he has written for the Sunday Independent. Spend big and keep spending is the headline there. Splash the cash, tarnish their urges. New clothes, household items, weekends away, home repairs and nights out. They should not be discouraged from spending on this, he's saying. We need to avoid the paradox of thrift in which people who have a bit of money are afraid to spend it. So everything looking rosy there. He promises inside in that piece that there will be no income tax rises, but he says there could be PRSI rises, but that's different from income tax rises, apparently. The Business Post. You see, our eyes are off a lot of balls these days with this pandemic. Broadband rollout target slashed as contractor admits delays, right? So the National Broadband Plan had a target this year of getting 115,000 homes done. I think it's around 400 odd, around 500,000 homes need to be done. They've done 4,000 in the first half of the year. And this is this is central to everything we're talking about at the moment. The retooling, the reskilling of the economy, housing, getting people to go live in empty houses, work from home, foreign direct investment we're concerned about. They care as much about infrastructure as they do, nearly as much as infrastructure as they do about our tax. So, those are the kind of things now that that would be a massive story any other time if we weren't so concerned about yavos in town. The Irish Daily Mail has Supermax boss Pat McDonough, who's accusing students and foreign workers of falsely claiming the PUP, and he has plenty more to say about that, and we know the form with Pat McDonough and his thoughts on these things. The Sunday World has that Daniel Kinahan was served with a summons in his Dubai bowl told by American lawyers. So he's been called in front of a US court on racketeering charges. He lives in a gated compound with heavy security, but someone got through and served him. Very sad news on the front of the Sun, the Irish Sun on Sunday. Sinead O'Connor says that she is quitting music after 40 years. So a lot of people will be very, very sad to hear that we will never hear Sinead sing again, because, her voice and her singing and her songs mean so much to so many people. And the Sunday Times, Gardaí under fire after Batten charging drinkers. So the government, Gardaí and Dublin City Council have faced renewed criticism for failing to plan for an outdoor summer, and picture there of guards across the street. And indeed, if you were looking online overnight at pictures like of cordons of guards at the end of Dawson Street, just standing there holding lines, no empty Dawson Street behind them. And it does not look like Ireland. It does not look like Ireland at all. Our panel today is Hugh Wallace, who's an architect and a director of Douglas Wallace and a presenter of RT1's Home of the Year. John Lee is executive editor of Irish Mail Newspapers. And Sheena Cahill is a former president of the USI and currently head of communications with Goshka, the President Awards. Good morning, everyone. Morning. You're all very welcome. Sheena, will you put on your headphones there? And let's just get a bit of eyewitness testimony and see what we can figure out about what happened last night in town. It feels slightly different to what we had been seeing, in a sense, because I think it was different parts of town, and also I think the character of it possibly is becoming a bit clearer now. So Conor O'Moran is a freelance photographer, and he joins me on the line now. And Conor, you were in town last night.
I was, Brendan, yeah.
Okay, now, Conor, I'm getting the impression that this was a much more distinctive group of people, and that this is a situation, I suppose, a lot of people might have felt this is contained in South William Street. And we heard yesterday that on the other side of Grafton Street, people were, enjoying the outdoor summer in a civilised fashion. Last night, different scenes. So the guards emptied out Stephen's Green initially. And can you tell us then what you saw happening after that?
Well, I joined. I was working earlier in the day and I was asked to go back into town at about 8 or half 8. And I went to the top of Grafton Street there where the Stephen's Green Centre is. And there was a number of Garda vans and a line of Gardaí from the Public Order Unit. And they started moving down Grafton Street, kind of pushing and trying to disperse the crowd in front of them. There was probably about 12 guards across the breadth of the street.
And how many people in that crowd?
Well, it was hard to tell because there was a lot of youths there, people drinking. But then there were kind of random people on their way home, you know, or trying to cut up Chatham Street or make their way to the Lewis and Stephen's Green, you know. So it would be hard to get a figure there. But when we got to the corner of Grafton Street and South Ann Street, another line of guards had come down by the Westbury onto Harry Street, where McDade's and Brussels is, and pushed the crowd there and moved them across onto South Ann Street.
Okay. So South Ann Street, just for people who don't know, is another street off of Grafton Street, but it would be a very popular street. Kyo's would be a well-known bar there with a lot of people, Dublin people and a lot of people from the country would drink at Kyo's. And in summertime, it's a place where people would often stand outside around the front of it having a pint.
That's it. Or people who are home for Christmas always meet in Kyo's, yeah. You know. So I was kind of photographing the line because people were kind of arguing with the guards trying to get through. And as I was doing that, I heard a bit of commotion behind me and I turned and there were two guys being arrested. There was about, you know, maybe 6 or 7 guards subduing them. So I don't know why they were being arrested. There was a lot of people kind of trying to video the guards and not kind of moving on when the guards were kind of asking them to move on. So that kind of quietened down then and the guards kind of formed across South Ann Street and there was a crowd down at the kind of halfway along South Ann Street where Kyo's is and there's a kind of fast food restaurant there and there's a couple of laneways. And there was about maybe 150, maybe 200, 150, something like that. And they were partying and they were, I'd say they were quite young, like I'd say from the age of about 15 to 24. In that cohort.
Connor, the assistant commissioner, Anne-Marie Cagney, I see the guards were calling them yesterday, quotes, organised groups. She's calling it a group of like-minded people today. Would you say, is there a distinction here between this crowd and what they were up to and then obviously other people who were maybe in town drinking, maybe, or people who were going about their business in town? Is this a very distinct group?
Well, put it this way, there was a few people drinking around Kyo's and South Ann Street who seemed kind of a bit bewildered about what was happening, you know, and they were kind of getting caught up in it, but trying to make their way out of it at the same time. You know, they were kind of interested in watching it, but they didn't belong to it, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They kind of, you know, they looked like they wanted to taunt the guards and get maybe a bit of a chase or something like that. But the kind of guards left them for about 10 minutes or so. And then a reinforced line of guards, public order unit, came with shields. Now, there was no battle.
And where are we now again? Like we're on South Ann Street.
We're on South Ann Street, moving down past right. Kyo's. And at about that stage, there were a number of missiles were thrown at the guards. So I would, you know, estimate, I'd kind of count maybe about 5, but there were kind of bottles thrown high in the air from the back of the crowd,
okay,
landing in around the front of the guards. I ducked down Duke Lane, the laneway to the side of Kyo's, you know, not wanting to get hit in the head by a bottle, and the guards were pushing people down. So they were, at that stage, they were being robust enough in their directions to the crowd.
Yeah.
That took a few minutes. They kind of did it in about 3 stages to the junction of Dawson Street. And what I kind of gathered was that as they were pushing the crowd, that some of them were dispersing and peeling off and maybe either saying, OK, I'm going home, or they were going elsewhere.
OK.
Because as they pushed them up Dawson Street, there seemed to be fewer. You know,
okay.
It didn't seem
right.
to be a kind of cohesive crowd, so
okay.
to speak, you know.
Okay, okay. Thanks for that, Connor. Sheena Cahill, it's maybe a slightly different situation now to how this has been portrayed Up to now.
I think that the situation has developed over the last number of days. I think what were certainly young revellers going in, you know, of an evening to the city centre, it certainly does appear, even from last night, that there was a little bit more organising to it, and there was a little bit more more coordination from certain groups. But look, I mean, the reality here is that it's not a good look. It's certainly not a good look to have young people splashed across almost every paper this morning. It's really frustrating for the majority of young people who weren't there, or if they were there, as Andrea Horan I think said during the week, you know, they went where the crack was. You know, there was a bit of banter happening. They started going there, but also they were forced there, Brendan. Like, when you close all the city spaces up across a small city like Dublin, and you force people down narrow spaces like South William Street, as the guy who was speaking there talked about, there's nowhere else to go. And so, of course, if there are a couple of people with any kind of an agenda, or come in with any kind of, we're going to cause a bit of hassle here for the lads in blue. If there's any of that element,
yeah,
you're going to have a problem. And they did have a problem because it wasn't planned properly and it wasn't controlled properly. It's not like, I mean, we shouldn't be at a situation where it's an I told you so again. But like, we've been talking about this all week. So yeah, it's not nothing's going to happen.
I wonder if you can plan for that kind of thing, though. And in fairness, what can you plan except policing? And they did have policing. Huge, as Gina says, it's not a good look for our city centre, is it?
No, it isn't. And even worse, I had clients up from Mayo and I said,
oh my God,
stay in Brooks Hotel. Where better to put them, where the violence was and the congestion. And I really, I find the whole thing very confusing because, one, we're in a pandemic, which is still there. Two, I didn't think we were supposed to be drinking on the streets and revelling.
I think our understanding is that it is against the law.
Yeah, so I do think people just have to take that element of responsibility. And if you're going to have a big party, that's a problem, which the night before was a big party. I think last night there were different things afoot of a much more sinister nature. And I do agree you can't blame the youth on this or anything else. But it's again those confused messages of can we go out, can we party? And we're not supposed to. And like today or yesterday, there were 500 new COVID cases. And we know that there are high points of those in places like Limerick because there were big parties 10 days previously.
Indoors is the problem.
The government's messaging, and you're absolutely right, has been mixed on this. But on every bus shelter in Dublin, it's been telling us to have an outdoor summer. And
yeah, I think they have moved it on to no avoid crowds, though, you know.
What is the story with 1 metre, though, as well? And people kind of unclear as to whether it's 2 metres or 1 metre now.
We'll come back to that in a second. I actually want to talk to Laura Durkin now, who's a consultant rheumatologist at Beaumont Hospital. And Laura, you've been in with us here talking about medical matters, but you were out and about in Dublin city centre yourself yesterday, and what was it like as a person who was in there with kids and stuff?
Yeah, so I live in the city centre, and I love a friend in the ball, you know, the crowds, the parks, we walk everywhere. And last night after dinner, I took my kids and my parents, who were up from Mayo, again, more Mayo people in the middle of this, and we went into Grafton Street to get some ice cream after dinner. And sure, it was only gorgeous the evening. And around, it was about 7:30, and around Leeson Street, my dad said to me, you know, God, Laura, you'd see more crowds in Ballina. It's very quiet altogether. And it was lovely. Like, the city was looking beautiful and everything was gorgeous. And we got as far as the top of Grafton Street, going to turn down to get ice cream. And there was a line of men, of young lads, men, I'm sure they're men, peeing into Stephen's Green at the gate. So there was about 5 of them peeing through the gate. And then over in the corner at that lovely entrance to the green, there was 2 lads absolutely beating the heads off each other. And then there was another guy who was kind of seemed to be somewhat involved with them, throwing bottles from kind of the Lewis tracks over to kind of hit them. And we were there with, you know, the buggy, the dogs, the parents, the whole lot of us. And it was just awful. Now, if you turned and looked up Grafton Street, there were loads of people who looked like they were having a great time, and they looked like they were really normal young people. And God, like, you know, half of me would be jealous at the thought of having a big party. And they were outdoors, and they have been all doing their best. But definitely there was an element there last night that was really unpleasant and menacing. And my mum, as we were walking by, said, God, Laura, I really just don't feel safe. This is horrible. And yeah, we walked very
quickly
home.
What time was it now, Laura?
So we would have left the house at maybe 7:30. So this was around 8 o'clock, I think.
Yeah.
And then pretty quickly after that, it seemed like they shut everything down. But certainly, I think it was a very, what we felt was unsafe. And I suppose in that scenario, the police have to do their job, you know. And so I was kind of happy to see things shutting down a little bit, because it felt like something bad was going to happen last night.
Okay, Laura Durkin, thanks for that. John Lee, so now we're having to shut down the city at 8 o'clock. People with their families and stuff don't want to go in there. I mean, someone else was telling me that 2 weeks ago at 3 o'clock, they were down by the Gaiety Theatre, and they said that the atmosphere there was so menacing, they didn't feel right about being there with kids, because I think there's a couple of places down there serving drinks, and they just decided, no, it's time to get out of town. No, it seems the morning is the only time to go in there.
Well, hearing these eyewitnesses and reading the coverage of yesterday and involved in some of the coverage myself, I'm reminded of a time I was, as a child, my dear departed father brought us to a football game at Tottenham, White Hart Lane. And it was in the worst days of British football hooliganism.
Yeah.
It was all driven by drink, alcohol-fuelled, urinating on the terraces, fighting. I remember a woman had her head taken off by a bench thrown down on her head. This is dysfunctional behaviour that's reminiscent of
yeah,
of
and
English
these are like those
hooligans.
Firms, aren't they? Like, clearly gangs out, like-minded, as you might say, like those football firms of supporters who they're going out looking for this.
Absolutely. Well, that's what the Gardaí said in a statement last night. Leo Varadkar, I spoke to him briefly yesterday, condemned this behaviour. The people should stop making excuses for the people involved in this, because there seems to be a feeling that because they're young, they should be absolved of this. They're young, behaving like young people did when I was a young fella 20 years ago. Just because we did it incorrectly then doesn't mean it should be repeated. And this is, take it well away from the pandemic, this is Ireland's dysfunctional relationship with alcohol. This doesn't happen in other cities. I used to go out in Madrid when I worked there, and you go for a stroll, families would go for a stroll along the street in the middle of Madrid. That's a tradition there. Chicago, I worked there, if you were caught on the street with an open vessel of alcohol, you were arrested. The toleration for this kind of behaviour is extraordinary, and just because it happened when we were kids doesn't mean it's correct. I wrote a piece today for our paper. We're the sixth highest consumers of alcohol out of 194 in the world. These things have been forgotten during the pandemic. When it comes to binge drinking, we're at number six.
Yeah.
And if that's not bad enough, we're at seventh for the world's drinkers, but we're projected by the World Health Organization to go up to number three. So it's getting worse. And you know, public health doctors like Tony Houlihan in the past have spoken out about our drinking. So, you know, I don't think this is a pandemic issue or a street issue. It's to do with our attitude to alcohol.
It's a social issue, and it hasn't been addressed. As you know, I've spoken
to
you about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's the inability of society to understand the effect of alcohol. So whatever about last night, the night before, was alcohol-induced chaos on the streets. And it's a social issue, as well as it's for all ages. So it's not just about the youth. Everybody's in the pot when it comes to drink in this country. And it's like watching. So the pubs serving drink out through the hatch would close at about 9:30. And it was a rush up to get 10 pints or 5 pints, so you could line them up on the nearest window ledge and keep drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we should be cautious here, Brendan, that this doesn't, that we don't overblow what's happening in Dublin either. And I'm not here to say that anyone should be standing over antisocial behaviour or what is particularly what went on last night. But also in the Mail on Sunday, you know, the note from the guards was that there was 14 arrests on Friday when a usual night in Dublin would be between 35 and 40 arrests. And I'm not suggesting again that any of this is fine. But I also don't want to overblow the fact that, you know, the youth are completely out of hand and alcohol is like the it has completely destroyed the middle of the capital city. I think that there's I definitely think that there's some issues here. But a lot of it, while alcohol is certainly
is
one,
a catalyst, like
absolutely. But number two is the lack of planning by a mishmash of authorities in Dublin city centre for what was very likely to happen this weekend, which has caused a scenario where a lot of young people gathered together in the capital city. And I think that has to be part of the discussion here, rather than just saying that, you know, that blame around youth and the blame around alcohol there. I do accept, though.
So alcohol's not involved in the issue.
I do.
Are you saying that?
Not at all.
Well,
I do accept that. I'm about to say, Hugh, which is that, you know, I've worked in students' union politics for many, many years. And one of the key issues we saw year after year was the problem with alcohol. But in this instance, it's a problem with alcohol, absolutely, but also a problem with spaces in the city centre, and we have not been providing those spaces, and we certainly knew in advance of this weekend that this was going to happen or something was going to happen, and we failed to plan.
See, Hugh, I wonder, does this kind of cut to the heart of, as an architect now, what is this city for?
Correct.
And who is it for? And the various competing cohorts, and we saw people in hospitality making a very strong argument to have places pedestrianised and to have the use of the public space. I'm not suggesting they're responsible for this, but that's one competing group that got what they wanted. We now have shopkeepers who are saying this is, we're trying to get back after a pandemic, this is destroying us. You have people like Laura Durkin, families who feel they should be able to go in and have their passeggiata in the evening and get an ice cream and everything. And we clearly, have we decided what we want Dublin City to be, or has the pandemic meant that it has become a no man's land?
No, well, you can't just focus on Dublin. So you actually should be looking at Cork, where they've actually decided that some of the streets are pedestrianised, they're organised, they're controlled, and they work. So I think it's Princess Street in Cork, and it's fantastic. Yeah. But that's what should happen in South Ann Street. All you have is a free-for-all. People are allowed to go on the street. There is no control. So you don't go into a pub without control.
Yeah.
But we're allowed hundreds of people, and again, I don't care about the age, so hundreds of people to go out uncontrolled with unlimited access to alcohol. And that's what's happening on our streets.
Yeah, John.
And that's where the problem is.
Yeah, okay. But there seems to be a severe contradiction here, and it's a thread running through the government's handling of the restrictions of what the government, led by Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar, seems to assume what people will do when restrictions are loosened, rather than observe what actually happens in Irish society. So go back to Christmas, let's have a meaningful Christmas. But what that actually means in Ireland, and you know, we've experienced it, it means everyone piled into the pubs and we had this super spreader event. And not young people, but it's again, it goes back to our attitude of alcohol. Again, last weekend or this weekend, we're talking about providing facilities. The government, starting with Micheál Martin at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting on Wednesday, followed by Simon Harris on Morning Ireland, I think it was, blamed the county councils and the local authorities, a very, very convenient scapegoat. But we're not supposed to be gathering in groups in the city centre at the moment. You know, why would you provide
toilets?
Well,
we're allowed to gather in groups of six people, aren't we? We're supposed to avoid crowds.
Or in an outdoor area,
I
think it is 15. But there were far larger groups there. And then you're left with a problem the Gardaí would have. How do you determine which people are in smaller groups? In fact, they all gathered in groups of hundreds, if not thousands. And it's this contradiction between what you would like people to do at Christmas, have this dreamy Perry Como Christmas, compared to what they actually do, which is overindulge in alcohol, forget all social distancing regulations, and lead to conditions that are not desirable in a pandemic.
Yeah, I don't think everyone did that. I really don't.
I also like, think people.
But the figures showed after Christmas, for instance,
themselves.
that they did do that.
There seems to think that you want to have a nanny state. People are responsible for themselves. We know the pandemic. We know how to avoid it. Some people choose not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you see, the problem is the rest of us then pay the price for that.
Absolutely,
so therefore, the question we come to then is, and those scenes last night, which, you know, I really thought that does not look like Dublin when you see the police out like that. Is the only answer here like hardcore policing to sort this out, Sheena?
I think, you know, Hazel Shue made the point during the week that, you know, after her conversations she's had with Garda superintendents across the city, that they are lacking resources. It for me, it should never have come to the point where you have the public order unit, whether they're in soft caps or not, holding up shields and that imagery of, you know, young people.
But what do you do if there's 150 gougers, as some people would see this, running riot through the city centre, who clearly don't give a damn, who are throwing glass bottles at the police?
But again, I think even on Katie Hannan's show yesterday, there was a security analyst saying, you know, that we shouldn't get to that point, because if you resource Gardaí properly from the outset, then the huge gatherings won't even happen.
But the guards
and you
say
can manage
that,
those smaller
in fairness,
groups
Sheena,
much,
the guards
much
say they have been pursuing whatever they, you know, engage, advise,
sure,
encourage,
but again,
all that,
it's
they've
not
been doing
happening
that
early
up to
enough.
The point.
It's not happening
they say
early
they've
enough.
Been doing it from early in
and,
the day.
And I think if you've groups who are set to do this, it's very difficult for the guards to
but
stop them.
With respect to the Gardaí, you have the major opposition party leader coming out and then questioning how they conducted themselves. There are camera phones everywhere. They're concerned that if they have an overuse of force, that they're then held out as the next scapegoat for government. This is a central government issue. They impose these restrictions and they should be enforced in whatever way they want. And if the Gardaí need to get heavy handed, then so be it. But there are resources enough, I think, to get into Dublin City Centre on a Saturday night.
Yeah,
and they performed pretty well, the guards, last night, I think.
Okay, well, look, hopefully that's the end of it. You were wondering, is the boil lanced now, you know, and does the complexion of things change as we move forward and hospitality opens?
The pubs open soon.
Yeah.
John Lahart tweeted last night, the Fianna Fáil TD, that maybe we're regretting, and this is against his own leadership's policy, we're regretting the closing of hospitality because it corrals people, and that's not his, they aren't his words, but it does bring some control to socialising.
But sure, anyone you spoke to in politics on Monday or Tuesday were saying everyone agrees the pub should be open on Friday, but it just seems that there's this paralysis. They were like, we wouldn't be able to get scramble in time, and how would we do it and all this. Wasn't that, I'm sure that's what you were hearing as well. Most sensible politicians said, we get this open before the weekend. Like, but okay, look, let's move on. Sheena, you were taken with the front page of the Sunday Independent today with Leo Varadkar's message of spend, the economy's taken off like a rocket.
Oh, splash the cash, he says. Spend big and keep spending. I don't, no harm, but who is this lad talking to? Because it's certainly not me, and it's not anyone I know in their kind of mid to late 20s or early 30s and beyond who are facing at this point now an 8% increase in our rent once that is lifted in Dublin and across the country for people who are renting. I mean, he's not talking to thousands of struggling families, many of them either both parents or at least one were put on the PUP payment, who are now looking at uncertainty there as well. Young professionals, you know, bursting away at home trying to, you know, gather up funding for, you know, these €350,000 homes that's apparently okay on the market at the minute. Like, I mean, I just don't know who he's talking to, because it's certainly not me, and it's really frustrating, and it feels, it's just very frustrating when that is on the front of the paper today, because I'm looking at that and saying, you know, that's not my reality, and I think a lot of people feel the same.
Yeah, I suppose what he would say is he's talking to the people who've built up the 15 billion savings, and that they have a duty to get out there and spend it in the Irish economy, because it seems we're betting everything, John, aren't we, on this bounce that we're going to get now, this recovery. That seems to be the government's plan in a large way, is that the economy takes off like a rocket, isn't it?
A wonderful phrase. He's gone all Harold Macmillan, but I agree with Sheena, you know, as in a household with two good jobs but two kids, I didn't readily see the money when I searched my bank account this morning after reading that. I think he's been a bit of a victim of horrible journalists like myself and the headline. But
Well, I think his piece is quite clear that that is.
Oh,
what
yeah,
he's
get
saying.
Out there and
yeah,
spend.
Yeah,
but, you know, Leo Varadkar represents a particular section of Irish society. Fine Gael have gone further and further to the right in recent years.
Have they?
Well, you know,
Hugh,
you know, for instance,
not
he was reported for,
that
he
the
was
idea
reported
that
recently,
we have any right wing politics in Ireland is unbelievable. We sort of have centre a little left or centre a little right. And even the right wing parties, who I don't think exist, do little left wing things. So I think that politics in Ireland, unfortunately, is sort of focused in the centre. And we don't have a functioning left wing party or group. And we don't have a functioning right-wing party, so we have this
And Sinn Féin and people before profit.
Yeah, they're not functioning.
The Western liberal democracies operate on the centrist politics typically, but Leo Varadkar represents a certain, and he would aim at a certain section of the electorate.
The middle class is the people who get up early in the morning, is what you're.
I think so, and he'd make no bones about that. He's a politician, and he has to aim at the people who will vote for him. You know, I was told, briefed on a cabinet exchange recently, where Micheál Martin stressed to all his cabinet colleagues that housing was the greatest issue facing them all, and Leo raised questions about that.
Well, that I think what actually happened was that Micheál Martin said we're going to make it our number one priority.
Yeah, and he raised all the other
questioned priorities. It, saying that there are other priorities. If we're making this number one, what happens to the others?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, but it still then affects the number one priority, one would think. There's a by-election coming up. There's a certain sector of society focused in that constituency, Dublin Bay South. What he's saying is fine. But there is, as you say, all bets been piled on the hope that there will be a spending explosion. If that doesn't happen, he's also made commitments in that not to raise income taxes, not to raise USC. Can all those promises be fulfilled when, in tandem, we have Pascal Donoghue over in London yesterday being told that our corporation tax is under threat? There are a lot of bills to be paid back. Yet again, I understand economics to a certain point with the ESRI urging us to borrow more for infrastructure building, particularly in housing. So it'll be difficult to balance everything else. But in fairness to Leo, he is trying to also send out an optimistic message. A lot of people hoarding their cash. I just don't know what cohorts of society
that
I know.
John Lee, you're not going to be spending, and Sheena, you're not going to be spending.
The credit card company will come back and I'll have to pay it back before the end of the year.
Hugh Wallace, representing the gentleman professional classes, will you be out spending?
I will. Yeah. I will, yeah. We're off down to a hotel for 5 days.
Where?
In July, down in Wexford, so we're looking forward to that. You know, and the funny thing about the lumps of Ireland I haven't a clue about. Up in Donegal, Inishowen, amazing. What an amazing place. I was there 3 years ago for the first time in my entire life.
Yeah. So you won't be going abroad this summer?
Nope.
No. Anyone else thinking of going abroad?
I'm going as far as Achill Island.
Perfect.
Okay, well, yeah. You're going off the mainland, I suppose, nearly, yeah.
But I don't think we need to be told to spend money locally because people are stuck here. So where else are they going to spend their money? Like, lots of people want to go on holidays. Lots of places are booked out all across Ireland and all across those amazing locations.
Lots of places not as well.
Of course, that's been mentioned by the hoteliers, in a lot of today's papers. But I just feel like it's a really condescending message to be like, don't be over thrifty, stop your saving.
Bum note there to you and your... Hugh, can I ask you, I did notice that even it trickled on during lockdown, a lot of people doing up their houses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You were all sick of looking into the corner of our home, and we've become very intimate with our houses.
Yeah.
So lots of money being spent on homes, lots of money trying to work out how they, you know, get that office space so they don't have to sit on the dining room table as the spag bol is put in front of them.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot of money being spent. And I think people are also deciding as well that they can manage with the space they have if they rearrange it.
Yeah,
and also there's just total lack of supply of houses, which means they can't move anywhere anyway.
We maybe come back to housing in a little while. But just on that, are we going to see a massive A, shortage of builders to do those kind of small jobs, and B, I know already in materials and everything that there's massive inflation in the building sector. Yeah. Are we going to see huge inflation there over the next
you're
going, years?
It's already happening.
Yeah.
So since Christmas, you can take it. The actual price of doing work has gone up between 10 and 15%. Builders aren't available. An awful lot of builders, in terms of plumbers, electricians, all headed back home to Poland, Latvia, wherever, and aren't coming back. So there's a huge shortage of skilled labour in this country.
Okay, so that's going to bleed into the housing, the actual building of houses.
You
as
can
well.
Take it, that's already happening.
Okay, our panel staying with us, Hugh Wallace, John Lee and Sheena Cahill. Let's take a break. So now, there
what,
you go.
What an icon.
Yeah.
What an icon.
That's a kind of a moment, isn't it?
It is. It's
a
moment.
Yeah. Were you a fan, Hugh?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
And what amazes me about Sinead is her voice range. And her ability to do songs from so many styles.
Yeah. She also explained to me about the bel canto, that it allows you to do things physically with your voice that you shouldn't be able to do. So the example she gave was, if you're in a building and it's burning down, you'd be able to scream fire at a much higher note and louder than you would be able to normally.
That's
but because it's coming from, you know, your core, like, you kind of defy the laws of gravity.
I think, Brendan, a lot of people are going to be feeling as selfish as you kind of indicated about just being so kind of gutted about the lack of potentially going. I had tickets to that, what was going to be that last tour, and obviously it was cancelled and moved to this summer and then cancelled again. And I'm absolutely gutted that I'll never get to see her live. But that, again, doesn't mean that we can't celebrate her music. And she was very clear about that.
Absolutely.
She's got to keep working.
Yeah,
so and she look,
who knows? The other people have retired and they have come back. So we'll see. Okay, let's take a break. I actually feel like having a little cry. Let's take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel still with us, Hugh Wallace, John Lee and Sheena Cahill. And look, we must get on with our lives now. And there are... there are still the hardy perennial problems with us, Hugh. And you were writing about... housing last week and your thoughts on the bigger picture of it.
Yeah, well, I think Conor Skeen has a great article in the Sunday Independent.
The much maligned Conor Skeen.
Indeed. And, you know, it's also there in the Business Post, there's an article in relation to Sinn Féin lobbying in relation to first-time buyers grants, although they're against it. You have Leo Varadkar saying, I don't want the canal to be a pedestrian zone because it's affecting some of his constituents.
Well, he wants to move to the other side of the canal, I think.
Well, whether it's on one side or the other, I'm just saying that, again, the one thing the politicians love to fiddle with is housing.
Yeah.
And they're fiddling with it in an appalling way. And it was not going to be delivered and will be the nemesis that brings down the next government, that brings down this government.
Now, Conor Skeen can send people's blood pressures through the roof, but he's making a point today, which is that the first weapon we have is managing the stock.
Correct.
Would you agree with him?
Yes, I would. There's 200,000 houses vacant at the moment, and they really should be about 100,000. So there's an opportunity to manage the existing stock in the first place. The second place is everyone needs to be told there won't be houses available for them, so we need to stop telling that porky. And thirdly,
tell people there are no houses for them, tough luck.
Absolutely. Why? But Conor, what are we supposed to say? Oh, we'll have 10,000 houses next year. 10,000 houses doesn't even scratch the surface of what is required. And the problem is we're now going to build houses in the wrong location. So I've noticed that the price of petrol's gone up, funny enough, by a fill-up of 21 quid. So we're now dispatching everyone out into the countryside where, in fact, it's not sustainable to live. And we need to have this discussion.
But somebody who spends a lot of time around town and business and stuff there, he walks around sometimes at night looking up at the upper floors everywhere.
Vacant.
But apparently they're just too difficult and expensive because of regulations and stuff, is it, to put flats in there?
Funnily enough, for front door. If it's an owner-occupier takes the floor above, it's quite easy. It can be revert back to residential as it was in the past. If you have individual apartments per floor, then the complications...
Which is presumably what we want in those big old...
But then there's a complication, and therefore that needs to be addressed. But in Ireland, we don't address that because that's what you have to do as far as the fire officer is concerned, and therefore the upper floors become abandoned. And it's like going down to anywhere, you know, Cork, all those buildings in the city centre vacant, and it's a disgrace. And we need to, like, the housing stock is actually there if we managed it.
Yeah.
But we're not capable of doing that. There's also, funny enough, a stigma down the country.
To living over the shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we have to get over ourselves.
Yeah. Sheena, you're at the hard edge of this.
Yeah. I don't agree that it's not sustainable to live in kind of rural Ireland. I mean, I know that, you know, Longford might not have been the top place for people wanting to work when all of us were required 5 days a week in the office. But I think there's a lot of work being done across Midlands and rural areas to provide. And this, you know, I don't want to bring up the broadband problem, but, I think there is infrastructure being built out now in those spaces too, so that people can live outside of the city, because it's not for everyone. But I absolutely...
Conor Skeen got himself in big trouble during the week.
He's always getting himself in trouble, Conor Skeen,
suggesting
now, to be
that
fair.
People should be willing to live somewhere else besides Dublin, I don't think it's about whether or not one
should be forced to be willing to be in the country. I think a lot of people want to live and have, like, you know, the great outdoors and the back gardens and the places for people to walk and all that kind of stuff and the good air. But I think as well, it's just mad. Like, you're talking about the hard edge. Yeah. Like, we were talking earlier about, you know, people spending money on their homes because they're looking at the four walls. The people who are not spending money on their homes are people who are renting at the minute, who, like, can't even put a lick of paint without asking a landlord. And then you're afraid to actually ask your landlord, could you do something with the house? Because it nearly reminds them that you're there and they'll up it by another 4%. Like, that's, it sounds dramatic, but that's actually happening the whole time. And there's a lot of rented properties completely falling to bits, and people are living in absolutely crap conditions at the minute and not able to do anything with it.
You know, having rented for years, and then I remember the first time into our own house, I could see it in the kids. I could see it that everyone was psychologically different. Like, do you feel that about rental, that it's not a home the same way as a home you would own would be?
I think it would be if we had a different attitude to renting and we had better, stronger, longer term rights for renters. I mean, if I knew I was going to be in a place for 5 to 10 years, guaranteed secure.
Yeah.
That is a different situation of renting than every 6 to 9 months thinking that at any point now the landlord's going to see what this house is bidding for on the market and up and sell and gone. And that's me out onto the street looking again for another apartment. And that's what the majority of people in their 20s and 30s are in at the minute. And it's
terrible insecurity to live
with. It is indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, look, that's all we've time for. There was loads more I wanted to get to today, but we will again. Hugh Wallace, John Lee and Sheena Cahill, thank you all very much.